are you? What do you want?
Henry Costin. I've applied to your advert in the Times. I'll be your aide de camp.
Mr. Costin.
What have you been doing, sir?
We've been at sea a week. Why are you just presenting yourself now?
I wanted to make sure you were up to the task, sir.
I see I'm both skilled at rifle and pistols. Medal for bravery.
It's very impressive. You have a family?
No, none at all.
I see. So nothing to shed. I take it you do, then. Mr. Costin, I would like to be clear. My reputation as a man rests entirely on our success.
And that's a clip from The Lost City of Zed. I'm delighted to say Robert Pattinson, one of the movie stars, is with us. Robert, hello, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, thank you. I say it stars Robert Pattinson because it says so. I've read all the information about the film, and I went to see the film, and I saw you in it. Well, apparently it was you, but it was you're unrecognisable, Robert.
I know, I think that's becoming... I want that to be my thing from now on, but I don't know how sustainable it is as a career if no one recognises you every time.
But just so you play a guy called Henry Costin. Just explain what you look like.
God, how do I explain? Well, I mean, he's someone who kind of errs on the side of vagrancy a little bit. He kind of has an enormous beard and Victorian-era glasses and... I don't know, he's just a complete contrast from Charlie Hunnam's character, Percy Fawcett, who's very together no matter where he is.
Let's get you to tell the story, and then we can talk about the characters a bit more. So The Lost City of Zed, what is it? What's the story? Where do you fit in?
It's about Percy Fawcett, or Colonel Percy Fawcett, who is an English explorer between 1908 and 1922, I think. He was very famous in England at the time, and he became famous because of his solo treks into Amazonia, and on one of them he found a lost civilization, which he became obsessed with the rest of his life and kept returning to the jungle to try and find it again. And may have been unsuccessful.
Yeah, and maybe not. And that is the city of Zed. Why is it Zed?
That is the question.
It's kind of not. We see a speech in which he says, and it's called Zed.
I know.
And I was thinking at the time, why?
Very.
Why are you calling it Zed?
Very emphatically as well. And also because I got the movie in America where it's The Lost City of Z, which does sound kind of more mysterious, but The Lost City of Zed sounds like a kind of 1960s sci-fi movie.
I did think it was going to be a zombie film.
It's a sequel to World War Z. World War Z, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Henry Costin, your bearded character, but I read someone who said it looks as though you're about to be in the George Bizet story. Mm. And I laughed when I read that and I thought, I don't know what George Bizet looks like, but I imagine he looks like your character with a big beard. Anyway, so how does Henry Costin fit in with this pattern of with Percy Fawcett?
Henry Costin was Fawcett's kind of aide-de-camp. In reality, literally just saw an advert in the Times saying adventurers wanted, and that's actually what happened. He applied. He was the only person who applied. He was a refrigerator salesman.
You're kidding.
He'd just got out of the army in England, and I don't think there are that many career opportunities at the time, especially to do something completely wild and exciting. But being a literal adventurer at the time, you could just apply and go. It was kind of almost like being a pirate.
Because we sort of recognize the Percy Fawcett character, because there is, in fact, he reads Rudyard Kipling, which his wife has sent him. We get that kind of adventurer, and he's got the moustache, and he's rugged, and he's good-looking. Mm. We follow that, and we kind of understand it. Your character, it's interesting. I didn't know that he was a refrigerator salesman. Do we know anything else about him? Because I'm not quite sure where to fit him.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, he was just a sort of amalgamation of three different people who actually went on the trips with Fawcett. So I've kind of fudged the reality a little bit. How I thought of it anyway was Fawcett has such integral goal. His entire life is bound in these trips. And I was kind of the foil to that, where Costin is just going because he has nothing to lose. And it's just that he's just following Fawcett, who's essentially a madman. And for some reason, Fawcett just doesn't fail. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, everyone else who's doing these trips at the time would go and troops of hundreds of people with planes and trucks and everything, and Fawcett would just leave with like two or three guys and a few guides and just go and walk into the jungle with a machete. And I think Costin's character, he's just one of those people who likes the anarchy of madness and just kind of, he's like, oh, yeah, I believe in you.
So he's following a madman?
Yeah, and I think he likes the fact that he's mad as well. I think he's, I guess, a sort of rebel. I mean, I think if you look at all the other scenes of the movie where they're in the Royal Geographic Society and London society at the time was just so kind of stagnant and, you know, everything was kind of very buttoned up and stiff. And if you had the opportunity to just go into the jungle and be completely free and wild, I think that was what Costin's, that was the appeal to Costin.
And what was the appeal to you? We're used to finding you in unusual movies. The last time I spoke to you was for Cosmopolis. I thought that was, you know, an extraordinarily interesting film. It was a fascinating interview with David Cronenberg as well. We know that you pick interesting movies. We know that you pick them, you know, you choose your projects. What was it about Lost City of Z/Z that you thought, okay, I'll do this one?
James Gray was one of
the director.
Yeah, a few of my favourite movies he's directed, but especially a movie called Two Lovers. I loved what he got out of all the performances in his movies, and I think he's quite a unique filmmaker, and like he kind of, I mean, a lot of people say this, but he literally looks like he's just taken out of the 70s and he's just making movies that are exactly the same standard now of a kind of classic 70s cinema. I just always wanted to work with him. And this movie, as it came together, he just got the most incredible crew with Darius Conji, who shot it, who's just probably one of the top three cinematographers.
And using film.
Yeah. Okay. And also, we shot on location in Colombia.
Using film.
Yeah. I think even if we didn't use film, it's weird because I did this other movie called The Rover, which we used film as well. And I think if you're using digital cameras in extreme environments, it's actually more risky. Because film has, it just won't really break down. It's just it's a machine, really. Whereas if you're shooting on a red camera or something, you know, it will overheat all the time. And it's also, there's so much moisture in the air. It's actually, it's more reliable to use a film camera. You know, it's hundreds of years old technology.
So you're in pretty extreme circumstances then. It certainly looks as though you are in the Colombian jungle.
Yeah, I mean, I think 100% was, but I think there was just this weird thing that happens to you when you're doing a movie where I just don't believe that anything bad is going to happen, even though bad things were happening everywhere around us. So we had a great situation where...
Why do you think that?
I don't know. Just fluke. It's because nothing bad has happened to me, so I just think, even though the likelihood is the longer I go without getting seriously hurt on something, you know, it's probably the likelihood.
So what were the bad things that were happening elsewhere?
One of my favorite experiences on this was when we were out, because it was all completely virgin jungle where we were, and the Colombians who were living there, no one went into the jungle. There are paths for a reason, and kind of the creatures who live in the jungle don't really go on the path if you leave them alone. There are these things called, I think they're called arbor vipers, and one of the crew got bit. They're snakes they live up a tree, and a guy got bitten, I think, in his face by a snake. And the one guy who sucked out the venom was the props master of EastEnders. And it was his first movie. And he just went straight in and sucked it out and spat out the venom off us. And the guy was all right after.
That probably doesn't normally happen if you're on the set for EastEnders. Normally.
Yeah, no. And it was his first movie as well. It was just full 100% commitment. He wants a film career.
Right.
I'm not doing TV again.
I'm interested in the fact you said you think nothing bad will happen to you, because that's kind of what Percy Fawcett thinks. He sort of has that element of, I know that there are arrows being fired at me on my boat, but I know that I'm going to find this city. I'm just going to carry on, and I know everything's going to be fine. So maybe you're a bit mad as well.
Absolutely. And I think it's kind of skirted on towards the end of the movie, but Percy Fawcett, I think, really in the back of his mind, kind of had a bit of a messiah complex and really thought once he finds this city he will be the god of this city in the jungle. I think that was kind of what he was thinking. So yeah, I think he was probably thinking he was going to be okay because he was completely mad.
Is it a challenge? Is it something you're aware of? I mean, obviously when you saw the screenplay you knew the direction that the story was going in. To make a film in 2017 about that era of expansion and colonialism and exploring, I mean, he was a driven man. I mean, amazing amount of drive, maybe aided by the fact that he had a messiah complex. But to take a sort of a 2017 approach to a very Victorian thing to do, like to go off and explore and find a new city, is quite a challenge.
And also, yeah, the connotations of what is essentially it's colonialization. I mean, but it was just regarded totally differently.
That wasn't his drive, was it? His drive was intellectual curiosity, wasn't it?
Intellectual curiosity and also being first, which I think is just, I mean, that is the kind of romantic part of colonialization, when you're just kind of, when you're actually just exploring and finding it. So it's kind of, it was difficult to, I think, get that tone where, you know, it's just got such different connotations now. But at the time, it was something kind of glorious. So it's a difficult path to tread.
Yeah. Have you watched it?
Twice.
Because sometimes you said before, you know, you don't actually watch.
Yeah.
I think you, have you seen the last Twilight film, by the way?
I think I must have done. I think. Yeah. No, I think I've been to every premiere.
That doesn't mean anything.
Of a movie. Yeah. I think I've pretty much seen everything I've done. I'm pretty sure.
But you sometimes, might not.
Yeah. But I have seen this one.
What did you think?
No, that was great. I think this especially because it was so out of control when we were shooting it. I mean, we were shooting in the rainy season in Colombia for the majority of it. And it was just like really, really wild. I mean, me and Charlie lost, I think, 50 pounds as we were shooting it. I lost like 35 pounds. You're just kind of like, you're literally just like falling apart. And then to see this movie, which looks so kind of controlled, it looked like, you know, there's some of the shots in it are so kind of stunning and they look so set up. But this is all just on the fly all the time. We only had light until 2:30 in the afternoon. Right. And it's just everything was just kind of racing through it. And to see this kind of classically elegant movie, I was very proud of it.
Because the one thing it doesn't feel is out of control.
Not at all. That's very, especially James. Well, James is the most neurotic New Yorker that you could possibly find. And to see, for a man to choose to do a movie which is essentially 50% set in a river, where he was absolutely terrified to get in the river the entire time, was hermetically sealed in a kind of spacesuit the entire time. That's funny to see what came out of it.
Did you pick this movie because it was James? I'm just interested because you have, and this came out when we spoke with David Cronenberg, that you clearly wanted to work with David Cronenberg. When the scripts come in now, are you as interested in whose names are attached to them?
Yeah, I mean, I've always, it's just always difficult because it's kind of, you can have a really, really great script, but it can quite easily be a terrible movie. Whereas you can have a good director with a okay script, and the likelier it is, they'll probably make it a good movie. Well, hopefully.
So, are you still as picky, do you think, in choosing your projects? I just find it fascinating that you will turn up in movies that we wouldn't expect, and that you're not the star. You know, this is not a Robert Pattinson movie. You're just in it, and you're very happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I just like feeling alien in an environment. I mean, I've got the next few things I'm doing are just kind of wildly swinging the other direction. The next thing is this kind of really, really hardcore kind of Queens, New York, mentally damaged psychopath bank robbery movie.
And which role do you have in this?
That guy.
Oh, you are that guy.
and then after that, I tried to do a sort of slapstick comedy, and then hopefully doing this 100% improvised movie afterwards. I mean, it's just, you just try and do things which you just hope you won't be bored, and hopefully then other people won't be bored too.
It's always a privilege to talk to you, Robert. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thanks a lot.